let's just fully concentrate on the Miami Dolphins. No need to talk about the Miami Hurricanes at all. Just go Dolphins. To a big backdoor cover. That was exciting.
We're going to leave all that in, right?
I'm so embarrassed constantly by this team. I will say, though, I said that they were no good, and I didn't like this coach. So,
well, North Carolina's offense is really good.
Dan, those coaches at North Carolina would tell anybody who would listen that Miami's linebackers stink and that they were going to take it to them. They know that D.R. King doesn't throw when he rolls out of the pocket, that he always runs when he throws when he rolls out of the pocket. They had a game plan that they executed to perfection.
Did North Carolina punt?
I don't think so. I know that they miss a kick. So North Carolina, for those that miss it, 62 points and two 250-plus yard running backs. One ran for 300, the other, I think, in the 260 range, and it was just...
But those guys have been overwhelming all season.
Oh, they got pro backs.
The only one who slowed them that I recall, I haven't looked at the game logs, was Notre Dame. And that North Carolina came right down the field on the first drive against Notre Dame, and I thought they were going to do to Notre Dame what they've done to everybody. Like, you can't stop that offense.
So Manny Diaz, as history would tell us, Manny Diaz got fired from Texas after Taysom Hill and BYU ran for like 550-plus yards. And he was fired by Mack Brown. Mack Brown last year showed that he knows how to exploit all the weaknesses of a Manny Diaz defense. I know a lot of people are coming for either Blake Baker or Manny Diaz. Ultimately, it's Manny Diaz's defense.
People are coming for the coaches on a 9-2 season.
It's a good bounce-back season, right? If I would have told you entering this year, you would have the same record as the Florida Gators, and the Florida Gators were right there till the end, you would have taken it. It's a solid rebuilding, but the gulf between you and Mack Brown's North Carolina has widened year over year. And for the life of me, I have no idea how North Carolina lost FSU. That's the most puzzling loss of the season.
You do not fire a coach or coaches after a 9-2 season, given what they've had happened the last couple of years. You fire Kevin Sumlin when you lose 70-7 and you're out. You know, it's a rival. You're playing Arizona State. I couldn't believe that box score. That box score was crazy to me, where the team that scored 70 points was 10 of 13 passing. 10 of 13. That Arizona had 7 turnovers and Arizona State had none. And Kevin Sumlin, who was propped up by Johnny Manziel, 9-20. In 3 years there. That's how you fire somebody after a 70-7 loss.
Remember the talk around Kevin Sumlin that he was going to go to the NFL? He was the hottest coaching name at a time. And this wasn't that long ago. And now he's unemployed again.
And I wonder where he'll get another job. Let's talk about the Dolphins. Chris, your moral victory for you yesterday. How did all of that feel? I know I was hearing nonstop, man, in terms of knee jerkers and hyperventilators that first half. How is Flores doing this? How is any of this possible? And then, of course, at the end, they're just, never mind everything I said. We lost to the Kansas City Chiefs, who had, was it 3 or 4 turnovers? The turnover disparity was 3 turnovers, 4-1, and you still lost at home. And you should have lost bigger than that, because Kansas City, against a very good defense, Kansas City fumbled in your territory or lost the ball a couple of times in your territory. That's about as bad as Mahomes ever going to play. I mean, he only threw 2 interceptions before that game all season, and he threw 2 in that game.
I feel like that game went exactly the way it was supposed to go. The Dolphins' defense looked a little impressive. You were kind of like, okay, they have a defense. The offense was like all over the place. They looked terrible for spurts, and Tua showed little flashes. I don't know. I just felt like I did think early on in that game that we have this. We're going to have a little false positive like Billy was talking about, but I don't know, man. I feel like the Dolphins are exactly where I thought they were before the game. Nothing changed really.
Counterpoint. That's as bad as Tua is ever going to play, because he had more interceptions than he's thrown in his entire career in that game, Dan. That's and true. What a fluky interception that was anyways. Ugh. There's no way. They should have scored before the half, and then Kansas City wouldn't have scored, and it would have been a totally different ball game, Dan. Big momentum.
Stugatz, where did you say this game was? Was it a who's who game, a statement game?
Litmus
I don't remember.
It was a litmus test and a measuring stick game.
And what was the result?
The litmus, it was that little piece of cardboard. It was almost...
inconclusive.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it almost got to the color you wanted to get to. I think it's purple or blue. I forget. I didn't quite get there. And the measuring stick, they were thinking somewhere in the neighborhood of like 6'5". They fell just a little bit short. They came in at like 6'2", 6'3".
Forgive me for a second here because I don't know how a litmus test works exactly, but I don't think you do either.
What do you mean?
Were you just doing that strip that you urinate on for ketosis to see what kind of acid levels there are on your urine? Like what did you just do with the strip that changes colors?
I thought that the litmus test was a piece of cardboard that you stuck into some sort of beaker, and you
I don't know, you might be right. I don't know anything about this.
And it's supposed to turn like purple to get the desired effect that you're
so
looking for.
I still don't understand where we are with the Dolphins. They lost the game and you played with the Chiefs. It's almost an unfair measuring stick. Nobody can play with them. Like, they're the best team in the sport by a good amount. They have more ways to beat you than any team in the sport.
It was inconclusive. To be honest, they should probably play the game again. I mean, we'll see. But here's what I'll tell you. The Dolphins, that game started exactly the way you want it to start if you're a Dolphin and you're a Dolphin fan. You got a guy who never throws interceptions, throwing two in the first quarter.
Running backwards, running toward his own goal line.
And you have to turn those into points, both of them, and not into threes in the sevens against that team, or else what happens? It's 30-10 at half.
I feel like where you had the Dolphins in the AFC pecking order before this game is exactly where you have them right now. Like, I don't feel like you moved them down or up with this game. I just feel like they played the Chiefs, and they played them close enough where you're just like, yeah, the Dolphins are pretty much where I thought they were.
It's hard to be disappointed with that final score. You know that you have work to do to reach the levels of the Kansas City Chiefs. However, you did everything defensively you thought you needed to do to win that game. And I know they still
scored 33 points. It's Mike, I'm telling you.
They got a backdoor cover, but they're not close.
They turned it over four times.
Mike, I'm not kidding you when I tell you I watched that team, and this part of my sports fandom has been dead for a long time. I get jealous. I get jealous that someone else gets to have Tyreek Hill doing that to a secondary where you're more athletic than a whole bunch of people who are super athletic, and that they also have Travis Kelce, who's totally absurd. He's a totally... And then they have also Mahomes, the best quarterback any of us have ever seen.
And they have the most creative scheme with Andy Reid. Like, they have everything. It's not fair. I'm right. You're right, Dan. I'm jealous too.
33 points, and they were awful for them. Grading on their curve, that is not a good football game for them. And just, I find myself, if you hold them under 5 touchdowns, you're pretty good. You're doing okay.
Travis Kelce leads the NFL in yards receiving. I mean,
he might have won offensive player of the year in the NFL with that performance last game, and Mahomes falling back down. Now, I think in the history of 5,000-yard passers, which is where Mahomes' trajectory was on, the lowest interception total was 10, and entering yesterday, Mahomes, it's just an unreal clip. So Kelce might be the offensive player of the season. When it comes
but
to
not in his own huddle.
But he's not the best player in his own huddle. He's probably like third. When it comes to evaluating Tua, though, which is what this season is all about, I know a lot of people are doing the wins and losses thing. Year over year, defense, you can't count on that carrying over. And this defense and that special teams make so many big plays, really making the game easy and putting that offense in such a good position that I'm kind of worried there might be a fool's gold with Tua if we're just, like, playing results and, we're hanging tight, because you can't count on that defense, which has been awesome all year, like maybe next year.
Mina Kimes, in her Twitter profile, wins are not a quarterback stat, and if you need more evidence of that, Barstool Big Cat put out before the Chicago-Houston game yesterday that Trubisky and Deshaun Watson have the same record. Who do you want as your quarterback, Trubisky or Deshaun Watson? Now Trubisky has a better record.
Right.
Going into the game, they had the same record as quarterback.
Beat him head to head. I'm not going to answer that question.
You're not, because of how you believe in wins as a quarterback stat. You're just sitting out the question because you don't want to say
yes. Yeah. boxed in.
Okay, so I understand. You just no commented me on a sports opinion.
Tua's played six games. Like we're already, and he seems to be getting better. It's six games into his career. We've already decided that, oh, I don't know if this is going to be a thing with Tua. It's six games.
It's fair.
This has been a roller coaster ride for me emotionally with Tua. Publicly, I've been very supportive, but in my mind, I'm going through all the emotions of he stinks, he's great, he's the future, I want him traded, like all within one game. I don't think he's
traded.
I'm being sarcastic, but I'm just saying I'm all over the place with my evaluation of him.
Well, help me. Does he look special to you guys? Like how often does he look special? Like I'm tuning in to the Chargers Falcons game yesterday. Late in that game, and Herbert has like seven incompletions. He's thrown 40 passes and has seven incompletions, and he's thrown the ball down the field. It's not like it's all right. Intermediary stuff, which it feels like all Tua's doing.
I'd like to see Tua with some talent surrounding him. I'd like to see what it would look like if he had a running game, if he had someone better than Devontae Parker as his number one wide receiver. And by the way, Devontae Parker, you have to make that catch in the end zone to go up 14-0 in the first quarter. You have to make that catch if you're number one.
Who was the guy? Who was the guy yesterday? Forgive me. Is it Aiken? Was it in the Houston game? There was a dude in the end zone by himself. It was like a 6-yard pass, and they just tossed the ball to him lightly. It hit him in the shoulder. Like he's facing Deshaun Watson, facing him, and the ball is just thrown right to him. And I don't even understand. It's like he had some sort of spasm or seizure. It didn't hit his hands. It hit him in the shoulder, and it was not even a hard throw. It was soft.
Prop queen, Mina Kimes, again, I just texted her, hey, what are some matchups that you think might be exploited? She texted me before the game, Deshaun Watson's going to have a rough one. Hit all the unders, Dano.
Thanks for sharing. The arm
strength from Tua is definitely alarming. You're not seeing him throw outside at all. Everything is in the middle of the field. You are seeing flashes of the anticipation where a guy is covered and he throws him open. Like there's been a handful of those, and those are what you're leaning on if you're a Dolphins fan. Like he can expand the field eventually, but you do see the glimpses of his vision. So that I'm excited about. But the arm strength, when you see Herbert, there's a big gulf there.
Chris, I thought he had a bigger arm entering the league. I really did. People would rave about how accurate he was and how the ball looked different coming out of his hand. And in the NFL, there's nothing remarkable about that arm.
When he came in for Jalen Hurts in that national championship game, I think the first
because he was going downfield.
The first time the country saw him, that's the first thing that stood out. Wow, that guy's got an amazing arm.
One of the things that I have noticed about the evolution of the quarterback position as the rules have changed, you guys heard me on here complaining perpetually about the Brock Osweiler way of play, which is, 4 yards out. Football even said, we don't want this anymore. We're changing the rules. We can't have this be the way that quarterbacks play. But when it comes to the measurement of quarterbacks, and this, I think, is where people get tricked all the time, because we've been talking for a while about you can basically put Colt McCoy in a game and you can get your 17 for 26, 215 yards. Just about anybody can give you that. But this is where I caution you on you get stuck with a quarterback for 6 years because you're doing the measurements wrong. If the best thing you can say about your quarterback is that he doesn't throw interceptions, that's not good enough. It's not, because the best guys in this league, they don't throw interceptions and they also carry your offense. Like if the best thing that you're looking at about your quarterback is, oh, I love that he doesn't turn the ball over. No one's turning it over. You will lose your job now if you're turning it over. There's such a premium on not turning the ball over. So while that's nice that Tua is young and not turning the ball over, it's also the most positive thing you can say about him so far, and that's not good enough.
It's six games, and it's, in today's NFL, 1,200 yards passing. That's not good enough. He's got the 9 touchdowns and gets just 1 interception, but you're right. To be selected where he was selected, to have the expectations, the ceiling that people have for him, that is simply not good enough. It's not. Now, we'll see if it gets better. But for now, it's not good enough. But I think it can get better, and I think it might get better. It depends on what they
should. It should.
Well, it depends on what. What they put around them.
It better get better. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
You bet.
Yeah.
Ever. It's the most ridiculous fan base. You're firing a coach after a 9-2 season, and you're getting rid of someone who's a rookie who's only played 6 games. The expectations are insane.
We're not getting rid of Tua. We're just A little nervous.
Yeah.
Just talking about it.
And in my defense, I fired Manny Diaz last season.
Well, Billy, how did you feel about yesterday?
They covered. They were supposed to lose by 7. They lost by 6. They did better than expected. No one thought they were going to beat the Chiefs. Did you think they were going to beat the Chiefs?
I thought they had a chance.
No one thought they would.
Yeah, but playing them close doesn't mean anything because Denver did that. Like, that doesn't mean anything. Playing them close doesn't mean anything.
The Raiders beat them.
Winning doesn't mean anything either. It's a regular season game. What difference does it make?
Winning matters when you're in a playoff chase, though, Billy. Like, that's a big game.
Are the Raiders good? Are the Raiders good?
Well, wait a minute. We could do this again if you want to. We could do this every week for the last 7 seasons. I will ask you again, is Kirk Cousins good? I will ask you again if the Raiders for real. I will ask you again if Kirk Cousins is for real. I will ask you again if the Raiders are good. We could do this show for the rest of time. Just flip it around because the answer changes every week. I don't know if the Raiders are any good. Do you?
Well, they beat the Chiefs and they play them close the second time. They've been the team that's played the Chiefs the best all season, and they don't seem to be very good.
On the outside looking in.
Are they? They're 7-6, right?
Yeah.
Is that on the outside looking in, 7-6?
Well, the Dolphins are 8-5, and they're the final playoff.
So they're
spot
the
right
they're
now.
On the inside looking out.
You know, they're on the inside looking
but
out.
But they're
the Raiders.
They're on the inside looking out for the Raiders. That's correct.
And the Ravens, yes.
I don't know if Tua is like this elite quarterback. And yeah, Dan's right. But what are there like 3 or 4, if you want to include Watson in that group, which I would. 4 quarterbacks that are, doesn't matter what the defense is, doesn't matter what our scheme is, this guy is going to eliminate third and longs. He transcends a scheme. But for much of the NFL, it's guys like, well, do we cut bait with Kirk Cousins or do we ride it out? He's too good to let go. And that's the reality of the NFL. And you can still build a strong team. It looks like the Miami Dolphins have a good foundation. They know what they're doing on defense. They have a tactician in Brian Flores that seems to be getting results. So you ride this out, you see the positives, you ask yourself the question, forget is he better than Herbert? Is he good for me right now? And Tua is, I think.
I think it is also fair, Billy, to look at what's happening with Tua and say, of all the Dolphins around him in the huddle, all of that isn't good enough. They're running back issues. They got hit
by Gesicki's good enough.
They've got got a tight end who is pretty good and a tight end that other teams would want, and that about is it. You look at their entire offensive line, you look at their wide receivers, you look at their running backs, in terms of what other teams would crave, there ain't much.
What they have is an ability to fix it with one draft, perhaps. They have their pick, the Texans pick, which continues to get better. They have their second round pick and the Texans second round pick all in this year's
draft. You got to pour it into offense.
Yes.
It seems obvious, does it not, that the offensive help that Tua has is insufficient, that Devontae Parker is not good enough as a number one. The offensive line doesn't protect him well enough, even though they've used 20 years of drafts on the offensive line, which is just stupefying to me. I don't think there's been a greater failure or breach of this organization than the amount of effort put into the offensive line without being able to block anybody. And then running back, I don't even know what they're doing. Chris, you explain it to me.
Man, they like, got nuked by COVID.
I know. They just got hit by the Rona so much. I know that running backs are disposable, but what can you do when there's zero threat of anyone running a football for any kind of great game-breaking way?
Yeah, they've been hit with COVID, regular injuries, and, you know, they brought Jordan Howard in. He's already on another team. That didn't work out. Who could have saw that coming? It's really bad. I just want to let it be good. Can Tua just be good?
Well,
please?
It's games. Like, look at what happened to Carson Wentz. Look at Mitch Trubisky. Everybody thought they were good quarterbacks.
No, Billy, but
they are now.
Carson Wentz, Billy, was MVP good when he, you know, his first 10 or 11 starts. He got
hurt. He's not now. So what difference does it make if he has a great first season? You don't know if Herbert's going to be great next year. They're having a good year, but you don't know what that's going to mean career-wise.
Billy, you are a good voice of reason on this. You're being totally reasonable as it relates to the way we've always done the quarterback measurements in youth. Guys, very rarely until the last 4 or 5 years has a guy been able to come in at any other time in the grading spectrum of quarterbacks. If this had been what you got at the very beginning, because Peyton Manning's first year wasn't any good, Troy Aikman's first year wasn't any good, if what Tua is giving you at any other time before the last 5 years – had been present, you'd be like, hot damn, a guy who knows what he's doing, a guy who's got composure. But they changed the way the measurements are done on this stuff. So I ask you, Billy, you keep saying it's only six games. It's fair. You keep saying there's room for improvement. It's fair. But you tell me, you've been watching these games and you've gotten excited by Tua? You've thought, hey, we've got a quarterback for 10 years. What are you feeling as you're watching this quarterback other than being reasonable?
Has little things here and there. I mean, I don't know. I don't know what he is yet, but he hasn't been a disaster, right? He's not a total bust yet. No. So give him some time and some room to grow.
You know what? I'm back. Good job, Billy. Yeah. Let's go. Tua's a stud. He's going to be a Pro Bowler. I'm serious. Let's go. I'm back.
To Billy's point, Dan, if a quarterback started like this in his first six starts in the 80s, we'd be calling him the greatest quarterback we've ever seen.
Well, Peyton Manning.
You would be.
I mean, he's got nine touchdowns and one interception.
You would be old no comment on Trubisky versus Deshaun Watson.
That was an unfair question, man.
I mean, well, Peyton Manning at the time was considered a very good rookie running back, and Dan dismissed it because—
Quarterback.
Dan dismissed his numbers, though, because— When compared to the rest of his career, the interception total was up there. But Peyton Manning did set the rookie passing touchdown record for the time. To me, what it feels like with Tua early on, if I'm forced to make an evaluation, it kind of feels like, okay, I've seen this movie before. It was a Ryan Tannehill one. And now it's almost as if, like, well, maybe we should have just wrote it out with Ryan Tannehill.
Also, the same affliction on Tannehill, where you looked around and you're like, where's his help? Where are the game breakers? Let me ask you guys this question. Billy or Chris? Roy, Tony, any of you. We're going to do this 3-2-1, okay? I'm going to ask each of you to just name the last offensive player the Dolphins had who you considered a legitimate game breaker. 3-2-1.
Mike Kosicki.
Brandon Marshall.
Brandon Marshall, Ricky Mike Williams. Wallace. Who else was in there? Who else was
Mike Wallace, I think.
Mike Wallace, yes.
Mike Wallace.
Yes.
That's terrible.
I know, but when they got him, and felt he's like fastest player in the league. Watch out. And it just turns out that the Steelers do that with every single receiver they've had since Mike Wallace.
I am impressed with Gesicki, though, because he's been really good. He improves week over week. He was one of these projects, and he required good coaching and a quarterback with some level of talent, and he's gotten better week after week. That's one of the – is he the best tight end in Miami Dolphins history?
God, here we go.
In Dolphin history. Is he? Might be. And we're talking Joe Rose. We're talking –
Randy McMichael. I think Randy McMichael is the high watermark here. There's a shot – that right now, presently, you have the greatest tight end you've ever had in franchise history.
Am I wrong about this? And I may be doing some bias here because he's a big white guy, but I feel like, different than Andrews or Gronkowski or some of these other guys, I feel like Gesicki is sort of stuck together with bolts and patches, that he's not the same, so that he's a bit of a Frankenstein monster running down the field.
It's because he's white, yeah.
Is that what? Okay, very good.
Yeah. I think it's Bruce Hardy. I do. I think it's Hardy.
Joe Rose, I want to marvel for a second at the fact that Joe Rose parlayed catching Dan Marino's first touchdown pass into a career that spreads across three decades in broadcasting in this market and has outlived newspapers and practically terrestrial radio. That Joe Rose has figured out a way in post-career to have a much better career than he had it during his football career.
He has a station named after him.
Wow, that's funny, because yesterday I was thinking about Romo's the height of that, right? Of that competition. Somebody who outperformed their playing career in their broadcasting career. I'm just trying to think of other people. I guess Joe Rose would be a poor man's version of Tony Romo.
Locally, he and Jimmy Cephalo would be another one. I'm trying to think of others locally that have outperformed their playing career. Jim Mandich would have been somebody for a while who outperformed his playing career.
Joe Rose's career high is 29 catches, 345 yards for a season. That was his career high. Listen, I'm not taking shots at Joe Rose. To make it to the NFL, especially the tight end was a different position.
Well, I want you to look at the tight end position now, and then I want you to go ahead and Google search Joe Rose. I want you to take a look at what some of these extraterrestrials are doing in that league right now.
Well, for his career, the big dog had 112 catches, 1,493 yards. I feel like Travis Kelce is going to do that this year.
I feel like Ebron is going to do that this year because that position has changed so much that Eric Ebron, a first-round pick, we all saw in college the talent that he had, and the talent he had was he's bigger than everyone else. Let me ask you guys this question. Do you guys believe that the Morris brothers in basketball would be great tight ends? Because I'm now convinced that what's happening here in this sport is just take the – and it's been happening since Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez – find a 6'8 or 6'9 guy, and nobody's going to be able to guard him because you're still trying to guard him with, like, the Honey Badger and some of these nickelbacks.
Yeah, power forwards in college basketball or converted quarterbacks seems to be all the rage for tight ends. Like Travis Kelce, converted quarterback.
Who was the one that you sent me this weekend that is being tried at tight end after being a quarterback? You sent me somebody. Logan Thomas is one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen collegiately, and then he played one game in the pros at quarterback that I remember is one of the worst games I've ever seen a quarterback play. They moved him to tight end. Now he's a good tight end.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Yeah.
It seems just to be the project. If you have a guy that doesn't have maybe NFL arm talent, let's see what we can do with this guy at a different position. I'm going to come out and say it. Gesicki is going to be the greatest tight end in Miami Dolphins history because at that position, they haven't really had great ones.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Keith Jackson performed pretty well. He was the big free agent signing many years ago.
Massive.
You remember? You're old enough to remember Keith Jackson. Wait a minute. How old were you when Keith Jackson was signed from the Eagles as a tight end? And again, please do me the favor, Stugatz, of just looking up the size and weight, because it was who was the other guy? Eric Green and Keith Jackson physically were the evolution of the position to that point where you were watching these guys and you're like, wow, that's an awfully athletic tight end. I'm not used to a tight end that is big and can block but can also run routes in a way that's fast. I bet you Keith Jackson's dimensions are smaller than the guys running around there today and shorter for that matter.
Keith Jackson was 6'2", around 250 when he played.
250 is heavier than I had him, certainly.
Some big omissions by us. Troy Drayton.
No, we mentioned him. Troy Drayton was mentioned in there. He was thrown in as, was it Troy Drayton? No, it was Randy McMichael who had the scrimmage game where he leapt into the end zone and we were all like, yes, this changes everything. The Dolphins have found the evolution of the position. And then...
and then you bring in Fasano.
Oh, takes me back.
That is so good. Fasano looks like his name.
Yes, mm-hmm. He does. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't trust a Fasano in order to make your offense something that hums.
Unless you got a head coach at Sperano. Then you trust Tony Fasano.
There is a song in there somewhere that rhymes Sperano with Fasano. I wonder why the Dolphins weren't very good back then. You can't trust. Come on, Stugatz. If your name, put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. If your name is Fasano, can you be someone who dominates a game with game breaking?
I made a song, but for a different tight end. Was it Joey Hanos or something like that?
Can you find it? Joey. Go ahead and find it.
I'll play it on the pod because certainly the Beatles are very litigious and I don't want to do that. I'm not going to go Hey Jude on the podcast, but maybe sometime during the live show.
So we agree Gesicki's the greatest tight end in Dolphin history?
Well, just like fight me because I'm going in with that. That guy's going to be the best.
I don't want to fight you. I'm scared of you. I'm scared. I'm limping in with Keith Jackson and Randy McMichael and I'm terrified.
Keith Jackson, for frame of reference, his first year after signing that big contract, he made a Pro Bowl with the Miami Dolphins and he had less than 600 yards receiving.
I wanted to ask you, Chris, this seemed like a game that I thought you would enjoy playing, where yesterday there were a couple of times that I thought about this because in the Washington game, Chase Young, what a predator that guy is. Chase Young takes a football, just puts it in his left hand and runs down the sideline 50 yards with the football, and it's the rare time that a guy's name is also what they were shouting from the opposing sideline, right? And I thought the same thing. No, the Chris, no, Chris, I thought you would like this. I thought the same thing whenever Chase Daniel was scrambling in the Detroit game when he replaced Stafford. Are there other names like that where the first name is the verb you would shout? Because Chase Young is a sentence by itself. Or I guess I should ask, there have to be other athletes where the name is a sentence, where it's got a verb and a noun, and you can make a sentence out of a dude's name. We've played these games around here forever in terms of fooling around with people's names. And I just thought that you specifically, Chris, because you've got a dumb sense of humor more than anybody else here, I didn't think it would be a very good topic for the radio, but I meant to come in here and tell you to start thinking about guys in sports that you would shout from the opposing sideline, Chase Young, while he's running 50 yards.
Let's get Randy McMichael.
This is a poor decision by you.
Yeah, maybe he loves the game. He's not very good at it,
just
though.
Just the first one. I'm looking at Randy McMichael on my
Chris,
screen.
Chris, I appreciate the effort, okay? Because I was filibustering there.
I'll stick with it. I'll keep going.
Let's get Randy McMichael.
Is it Randy? Like, you know, like, hey, Randy, baby. Like, you know, Austin Powers. Like,
it's more of an adjective than
keep digging that hole for yourself.
Than a verb. There's two gods for you, just there to make fun of you, not there to offer anything in the way of nominees.
I mean, sometimes you just got to abort, you know? I mean.
Another no comment from Stugatz, a record second no comment from Stugatz during a segment where we need something from him, and he's just like, ah, no comment, abort. This whole doing of a radio show and needing people to talk, I'm not here for it.
Dick Trickle.
You're going to find a lot of them in racing, because Chase Elliott, like, oh, his first name is actually what he does for a living. But in racing, you have a lot of crazy names like Cuckoo Marlin. You got Duck Waddle. You got Banjo Matthews. And my personal favorite, Dick Passwater.
Is Duck Waddle a real name, or did they nickname him Duck? Dick Trickle always wins all of these because he...
There's no way someone was named Duck.
No, his first name was Gordon, but they nicknamed him Duck.
But are those sentences? Like,
well, Dick Passwater is.
Certainly Duck Waddle. Like, if someone threw somebody at him, that is absolutely a sentence. Duck, I feel like, is his nickname just though because his last name ends up being Waddle. But no one's going to beat Dick Trickle. And again, that sounds like an STD and a painful one, I might add.
Also happens when you pass water.
Pat Summerall.
That's a good one. That works.
Not bad.
But barely. I think we can all agree that it works. It's not bad, says Stugatz, but you're just padding. You're just padding Summerall. A broadcaster has had a good game broadcasting. He comes out of the booth. What do? You pat him. You pat Summerall.
You pat Fitzgerald. You pat Sajak. You pat anybody.
No, Pat's excellent. Good job.
Excellent now. Stugatz has upgraded from not bad to excellent on Pat Summerall.
Walker Buehler.
I don't think you get the game, Chris. I really don't.
Bob
because
Walker.
Walker is not. Yes, Bob Walk is absolutely a sentence. Walker Buehler. Walker is not a verb, Chris.
Hey, Walker Buehler. Like, he's a walker. Hey, Walker.
You're pointing.
Buehler. Why are you pointing?
There's a comma. There's a comma. Right. I don't know.
It's not working. It's got to be a verb. No. Chris, do you know what a verb is? Are you familiar with
it? Yeah, it's a thing. It's a thing in a sentence.
That's the noun.
It's a noun.
Well, he's just saying it's a thing. He's not saying it's a noun. He's saying it's something found in a sentence.
I thought this started mean when Dan's like, I thought of you, Chris, because you're dumb and you'd like this game. And then this.
No, Chris has a
creative.
Chris has a funny, dumb sense of humor. He likes. Look, our show, Billy, is a funny combination and a stupid combination of high and low. And I think sometimes Chris and his father prefer the low. In fact, Billy, I would say that you traffic in a space where you are beloved, at least in part, because you do high-low very well. You do both of them in a way that is excellent, but you also like your dumb.
Thank you.
When you go high, I go low.
Now, Walk Buehler would work, right?
That is correct. Good. Bob Walk also is a terrible name for a pitcher. I thought Balfour was a bad name for a pitcher. It was his last name. It's not a
Homer
a,
Bailey was a horrible name for a pitcher.
Well, which one's worse? Put it on the poll. Which is a worse name for a pitcher? Balfour or Homer Bailey? Because we played this game the other way, right? What was the guy, the cornerback, Jammer? Quentin Jammer.
Yeah.
That's a good name for a cornerback. We've played it on the positive end, but we have not played the Chase Young game, where a guy's name is a full sentence. Are we out of material here? We're not going to do better than asking a dick to trickle. Excellent silence.